aside the ego and embrace the moment.
That's not the moment that you're embracing right now.
Oh, dear.
Regardless, it's time for another Midweek Drive transcontinental adventure.
And I have to say that the record looks knackered, frankly. A bit bumpy and very grey. But a good tune if it works.
It's about a 11:30, and I'm blind in the belly. We don't have no telly, so we can go out on Fridays. Head up the hill past the junk shop. It's made of wool and wooden stuff. We'll contemplate the meaning of life. And I cover you like the holy snail of Sunday. And I want you blindly. I'll fold you loudly. I'm gonna lick out all your juices.
The record looks knackered, frankly, a bit bumpy and very grey, but a good tune if it works.
Pretty awesome. But is the record as knackered as John Peel would actually say it was in that particular epic scenario? I don't know. Before we actually turn to one of the awesome members of the Pocket Gods, who's obviously responsible for that, let's go to Rebecca Bond. Rebecca, welcome back to the Midweek Drive. What did you make of the 2.5 minutes or thereabouts of Ballad of the Peshwari Nun that we've just heard?
I think it's fantastic. It's really unique, really artistic, creative, fun to listen to, got my feet tapping, fun to listen to, and is in my playlist.
Oh, there you are, Mark. If it's made the Rebecca Bond playlist, forget John Peel. You know, this is a whole new world for the Pocket Gods. Welcome back, Mark Christopher Lee. How are you, sir?
Yeah, hello. Yeah, very good. Thank you. Yeah, thanks for having me back on.
Always a delight. And again, in terms of your regular prolific productions, great that you sort of moved on regardless for that. Listen, for the benefit of the listener who might not have actually been familiar with the Pocket Gods, and I know we featured this when we spoke last on the program, but can you just share with us that cinematic epic tale of how just when basically the late great John Peel actually said this is fantastic, he goes and pops his clogs, and also what's the backstory behind why you've produced this awesome tribute to him a few years down the line?
Yeah, well, basically I was living up in Huddersfield, West Yorkshire at the time with my girlfriend, now wife. We went out one night to our local Asian curry house. And she had Peshwari Nun for the first time, and she loved it. She goes, why don't you write a song about these? They're brilliant. So I said, yeah, okay. So I went back and wrote and recorded this song called Ballad of the Peshwari Nun. I thought, oh, this sounds quite good. I think John Peel will like it. It's a bit offbeat. So I put a copy of it on, I think it was cassette at the time, and mailed it off to him, care of the BBC, you know. And that was it. And that was the last I heard. And then 2 years later, after a gig at a place called Joseph's Well in Leeds, My girlfriend, now wife, was driving me back on the M62, and I was checking my answer phone messages, and I was just swearing like a trooper going, F. She goes, What's up? And she goes, well, it's John Peel. He's left a message. He likes my demo, and it's all a bit crazy. So then my next thought was, it's a wind up. One of my mates is winding me up. But then, you know, I played it to a few people. It definitely was John Peel. Then he phoned back the next day, gave me his home address in Suffolk to send some more stuff to, which I did. And then the next bit's the tragedy, because that was the last I heard. And then a month or so later, he'd been on a holiday in Peru and died. So we never kind of got a big break, and the world lost a musical legend. So basically I re-recorded, because it was a bit of a kind of rubbishy demo, but he liked it. So I re-recorded it in the spirit of the original, as a tribute to the great man.
Was there ever any thought that you might actually bring out the traditional cassette tape with added pencil to actually wind on if it actually got twisted, so you could actually work through the actual old joy of analog as a sort of bonus? Or was it always going to be, no, this is digital, we're in the digital age?
Yeah, I think so. We have toyed with physical before, and it's, to be honest, for a small label and a small band, it's way too expensive to do it nowadays. And, you know, it's, yeah, we'd love to have it on 7-inch vinyl as well. But there you go.
Well, you know, lo-fi band based in St. Albans, or indeed Stalbans, if you wish to actually ignore the sort of full stop in terms of the limited sort of line of sight there. How is life in St. Albans these days? Is it still thriving post-pandemic?
Yeah, it's going very well. Yeah, the music scene's getting back up and running here, and we've done a few gigs and going to be hosting another Nub Music Showcase soon. So, yeah, it's all good.
Excellent stuff. Well, it's also good news when we welcome Rebecca Bond back to the Midweek Drive. Rebecca, say, this has made your playlist, so it's over to you to actually throw a few more questions at Mark Christopher Lee.
I would love to know your creative process, because as I said, it's very artistic and a lot of your work is. And I wondered the creative process behind that, because you also sing about some very, deep subjects, but find a really creative way to put them across. And I was just wondering how you go about getting those songs put together.
Yeah, that's a really good question. It does vary from song or album by album, but with the Peshwar in on a lot of my other songs that are a bit more deeper, I guess, I do start with the lyrics. I get an idea for a title, then I love playing around with words. I'm not comparing myself, but people like Bob Dylan, I love the way he would just, his lyrics were poetry, basically. And I love to play around with words and meanings and twist them around. And I spend ages trying to craft them. I mean, they probably don't mean anything to the listener. They probably sound quite good and think, oh, that's nice. But they have deep meaning to me. And I love doing that. So, yeah, no, thanks for asking.
No worries. It's really interesting because I find that a lot of people have different ways of going about it. And it's interesting that you mentioned that it probably means nothing to anyone else. But do you not think in a way that music is sort of what the listener makes of it in a way? You know, you could produce something, but to someone else that could mean something completely different in a way that you meant to come across in a way.
Absolutely. I mean, because I've written a song called My Next High, which is a bit of a pocket God's anthem. And people relate to it quite well. They always think it's about drugs and about waiting for your next getting, and it's nothing to do with drugs at all. It's nothing to do with that. It's about being depressed and trying to be happy again. And that's the way I wrote it, but it appeals to other people in different ways. So you are right when you say that. And that's the beauty of music, I guess.
Yeah, it's interesting how people perceive different things.
Yeah, it is, yeah. But yeah. Any more questions? Or?
Back in the 1970s, Mark, when we actually had the birth of punk, shall we say, and it was very much a reaction against the bloated musical industry at the time. It was a reaction again, arguably, certainly in the late 70s, early 80s, to the ideologies of the time. Here we are 40 years after the kind of launch of punk, etc. Do you think that the actual fundamental aspect of punk, that rebelliousness, is still there? Or is there ever a time when you sort of feel, yeah, we've just been sucked up by the current system and we're being spat out, as most things are, by the current Boris Johnson government?
Crikey, that's a bit of a that's a deep question for six.
You did say any more questions. I thought I'd just bowl one in there.
I do think rock and roll music, whatever, has lost a lot of its rebelliousness and anti-authority. It's lost that at the moment. I think you have to go to kind of someone like Stormzy or the grime scene to really find that alternative, you know, thinking. I think especially white indie bands, we're all stuck on the mainstream. We're all, you know, we're all part of the world which we're not going to change because we're all middle class and sitting in our suburbs and writing songs on our jangly guitars. I mean, I'm as guilty as that as anyone, but I could at least admit that and see that, you know, I'm not going to be able to change the world so much from where I am. I think it is other people.
In terms of, say, referring to your own rockumentary, Weird, The Life and Times of a Pocket God, described as Spinal Tap meets One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest. Was that a deliberate thing that you were looking for?
Yeah, absolutely. Two of my favourite films. And the ethos behind Spinal Tap are kind of taken to the Pocket Gods. We don't take ourselves very seriously. And we send ourselves up somewhat as, you know, if there was this indie Spinal Tap, that would be us, I guess.
have you ever, Mark, actually danced around a teeny tiny version of Stonehenge?
That's always been an ambition. But I have been backstage somewhere and not been able to find the stage, walking round and round, lost, going, asking the janitor, do you know the way to the stage? I'm saying, this is very Spinal Tap. So that has happened to me.
These are things, Rebecca, which if you ever actually take the opportunity to watch the Spinal Tap movie, you will suddenly sort of see like a shaft of light illuminating the sort of things. Because I can tell just at the present via our Zoom call, a little bit bemused by that. You know, what's he talking about miniature Stonehenges and this thing about not being able to find your way on stage? What strange things are this that they speak of? Honestly, has it all changed in the few months I've been away? Rebecca, any other questions you want to put to Mark?
I'd just love to quickly go back to something you just said, Mark, about, you know, you're not able to change the world and things like that. I think it always comes down to how it affects one person as well. You know, you could be changing someone's world. That I just really wanted to add that when you said that, because it kind of broke my heart. I thought your music means a lot to so many people. And I think sometimes that means way more than changing the world in general anyway. So I just wanted to add that your music probably means the world to people.
That's a really, really good point. And I'm glad you picked up on that, because I was going to qualify that by saying that what I try to do through the music is it's up to people to change their world, I think. And I'm trying to get that across in my music. And, you know, it sounds a bit cliched and a bit kind of, you know, I just want to make people feel better and kind of look at the world differently. And if I can do that through music, then that's great. All I'm saying is politically, I don't think I can change the world by writing a song, whereas someone like Bob Dylan might have been able to do, or Woody Guthrie, you know, way back. And maybe someone like Stormzy can now, or what's that guy that burned Boris Johnson's head at the Mercury Prize? What's his name? The white rapper guy. I can't remember his name.
It'll come to us in all sorts of ways, but I would disagree, because I think you are changing the world. Somebody else is also changing the world is the host of a new podcast series called New York Real Talk, because she's based in New York. She's also an ace singer-songwriter, and she'd be quite pleased to actually see Rebecca Bond back on the program, because I think, Rebecca, you were actually on Pamela Sue Mann's official debut as far as the Midweek Drive is concerned, and since then she's just blossomed as a radio sort of artist extraordinaire from New York. Pamela, welcome back to the program. I'm not sure, I don't think we're calling this New York Real Talk, but we're chatting obviously with Mark Christopher Lee from the Pocket Gods. I think it's fair to say, Matt, Pamela, you were pretty impressed by the quantity of albums as well as the quality.
Yes. When do you sleep?
Yeah, I don't much, to be honest. Always correct.
Pamela, we've had Rebecca's views of the Ballad of the Peshwan and et cetera, Anan. What are your thoughts on the particular track, the latest track that the Pocket Gods have released?
Well, first off, I have to say, I thank you, Alex, for including me on this, because I feel like I just entered a whole new world that I did not know existed. And I think probably we'd heard your name and not even known it. But John Peel was sort of a connector in a way, because my husband and I, my husband Jerry Leonard, has been, you know, playing guitar for lots of different artists and has had his own music iterations as well. And one of our friends, an artist called Nina Nastasha, quite brilliant, around the same time that you were discovered by John Peel, she was as well. And so we knew of John Peel because he was like the benchmark for coolness. I mean, if John Peel gave you the thumbs up, you were officially, universally, multiversally cool. And of course, this never happened to me. But when I was reading a bit about you after I just listened to the track that Alex had sent, I was like, Jerry, come here. And we, you know, immediately went on Spotify and we immediately just started listening to hours of your music.
There is hours.
Really, really incredible. I just love what you stand for. It's so diverse. You know, the instrumentals as well, and the ethos behind it, you know, that I'm taking from it. Just the whole world that you inhabit. Thank you for existing and thank you for making so much music. And I'm a huge fan, and Jerry's a fan too. He is in a session. We've been texting. He's running behind it, and I don't think he can hop on, but he was gonna hop on too because he was so excited.
Well, that's made my day. Thank you very, very, very much. It's like I make music, so hoping people will listen and enjoy it, and you know, to find a fan. Thank you.
The movement, it's
Mark.
Not just music.
It's more than just a fan with Pamela Sue, man. Of course, and Jerry Leonard. I mean, you've got the sort of. I mean, it's like the Beatles tried for years to crack America. The Rolling Stones as well. Obviously, the Beatles managed to succeed a little bit earlier, but this is a huge leap forward in the Pocket Gods getting that international US market. Obviously. Rebecca, anything you'd like to say at this particular moment in time for either Mark or indeed Pamela?
I hate up the whole pandemic situation, but I'm interested because I haven't had a chance to talk to you, Mark, yet about the past year. You know, more than a year now, but it's been a crazy year, and wondered what your experience was, either musically, personally. What have you been up to? How was that experience for you? Did it challenge you creatively as well?
Yeah, but to be honest, I found it very, very, very difficult. I do suffer from mental health problems, which I make no, you know, big issue of. And I found the whole lockdown situation quite difficult to deal with mentally, being trapped in the feeling of entrapment and not being able to do what you want. That was kind of hit me hard. But then I found a way of channeling that into the music, and I was very, very creative, and we had a really successful. Well, musically, just in terms of, because my aim still, I'm still not there, is to do music full time as my living. I don't quite do that yet, but you know, the pandemic and the lockdown, ironically, as horrible as it was, it's put me on that step where I'm getting close to my dream. So I'm nearly there. Because there was nothing else going on externally. And I got my own studio at home, which is already set up. The only difficulty was my other band members was a bit tricky, because we did some stuff where I sent them some tracks and they played drums and keyboards, but it was quite difficult to organise. So I ended up doing a lot of it myself. But yeah, thank you for asking. It was a productive lockdown, but difficult.
Yeah, I think it was a difficult time for many people, and it's nice to see that you know your creative process did, you know, flourish in a way from such a difficult situation. It's so good that something good has come out of that, because it wasn't a fun year, I don't think, at all, was it, for anyone?
No, and I've got three small kids as well, and it was difficult keeping them.
Yeah,
so they were missing their friends and all their regular stuff they do. So that's quite good having focus, so trying to keep them going. But yeah, it's difficult for everyone, really. So I mean, we're all well, pretty much sane, and you know, still going. So,
oh, amazing! Glad to hear you're all doing well.
Yeah, thank you.
One of our regular correspondents also from Los Angeles is Phil Leonis, and he sadly couldn't join us today because he's also locked into editing and so on. But he was very impressed with the reference to Shona Knife. that was actually made in terms of your songs are short and sharp, and when they're not tackling harder issues like depression and mental health, they primarily set out to entertain. Is that something, again, which you're very conscious of in terms of when you're composing a song, or is it just a case of take me to the nearest takeaway restaurant and I'll write a song about things?
Yeah. I mean, I am conscious that I do like to make a lot of my songs quite humorous and, as you say, entertaining and taking the darker side of life, but making it funny. I guess that's my twisted humor, really. So I like to do that. But, you know, it varies track by track, to be honest.
Huh. Well, we'll turn back to Pamela in a few seconds, but I've got to ask the question, Mark. Are you in a genuine automobile or is that just a virtual backdrop?
Yeah, I am actually in my car. I've dropped my daughter off at Brownies. That's rock and roll, isn't it? I don't know if you know what Brownies are in America. What's the equivalent? I don't know. Some sort of girl.
Yeah. Eagle Scouts, stick. Presumably. Female Eagle Scouts or things to that effect.
Yeah, so she's there. I'm parked outside in a real car, but which has petrol.
Wow.
Luckily.
And Pamela, you may not realise just how important the whole notion of having petrol is when you've actually got that whole situation. You know, actually, Britain having petrol is as wonderful as Jerry Leonard actually being able to actually connect also from the joys of New York. And it's fair to say, Jerry, welcome to this Midweek Drive Pocket God special. Now, Pamela's already actually said you were blown away by this, so no pressure. Are you going to sort of confirm that? Your chance to share your thoughts with from musician to musician with Mark Christopher Lee.
Hey guys.
Hi,
yeah, I love it. I love the stuff. You know, we had a real hoot listening to the songs. You know, I'm very jealous that you have so much fun with music. I love music, but I feel I have this tortured relationship with it. And I feel like you guys have this great sense of jubilance and mirth.
Wow, thank you. Well, yeah, I like to enjoy what I do. And it's my passion. And that just keeps me going from day to day. And if I didn't do music, I'd probably be in a straitjacket somewhere. So,
yeah, I hear you. That. Yeah. I'd be a great jacket too, just nobody to tie it up, you know, so it'd be just like left flapping around.
Yeah. But thank you for your kind comments.
Yeah, and it's a lot more difficult to actually play the instruments if you actually are strapped in a straitjacket. Presumably you just have to use your feet or possibly lips. But you know, I'm just saying it's a tough call.
Certain situations might sound better, you know. Certain situations might sound better with certain musicians in straight jackets.
Jerry, that's why we appreciate you being on the show. You can actually go straight to the point. It's like you know, Irish, no messing about there, straight in.
You know, enforced restraint.
Any questions you'd like to put to Mark at this moment?
Yeah, what exactly is in this Peshwari naan? Is it a stuffed naan?
It's coconut, basically. Coconut. Yeah, it's quite sweet. Gives it a different flavour. It goes well with a korma. Have you had a korma?
Yeah, I'm familiar with the korma. I'm going to try next time I'm in the UK because you've got such good Indian there.
Yeah, we do have lots, which is really good.
I like to say it's all benefits of empire, but perhaps that's not politically correct these days, but what the hey?
Common love.
You can't say that. You can't say that. Certainly as a presenter, you can't say that.
I'm just, it's there. I'll just put it out there as a possible observation. That's all, you know, what are the good things that came out of colonization? You know, having a decent naan in the British Isles, you know, it's one thing that's actually there, you know.
Yeah. Well, it's one way to improve the standard of restaurants, I guess, invade the world.
I'm sure that was exactly what the Romans had in mind. You know, they just wanted to spread pizza throughout, you know, Western Europe. It was certainly what, you know, probably, you know, the Germans had in mind in the 20th century. They just wanted to get sauerkraut to the masses. It's all about the food, that's Jerry. Right. All about the food.
Yeah. Well, it was a easy way to introduce the wheel to the rest of the world, right? So I was going to ask, how quickly do you do the music? I mean, how quickly does it come together?
it comes together really quickly, really. I find the time and then I'll create. I usually come up with an idea, or I give a lot of credit to my wife, actually. She'll come up with a lot of ideas. Why don't you do something like this? I said, oh, that's a good idea. So I'll write that down, go away. I might write some lyrics first. And then I'll pick up the guitar and work out some chords and then just build it around that.
So the words come first, the kind of topic or the
absolutely. I mean, I can just lay down. Sometimes I go back to an old backing track and think, okay, I could put some lyrics on top of that. But the lyrics are the bit I spend more, I guess, crafting the lyrics than I do a lot of time with music.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, I love the songs. I love the short ones too. I love the one about Jeff Lynne and Electric Light Orchestra.
I mean, that was because I did 100 songs all 30 seconds long about the Beatles, and that's the one I enjoyed making the most because I love the Beatles, massive fan. So I was putting all obscure references to the Beatles. Being a big Beatles fan, I could do that. And I sent it to Paul McCartney, but never heard back. But well, there you go.
Too busy. Oh, he's laughing so hard. He couldn't hit speed dial. I'm sure he had you on speed dial.
Jerry, I've got to ask you. Just briefly, Jerry, how are the gigs going with yourself and, of course, Suzanne Vega? I mean, we know that Suzanne Vega is basically your support singer. She knows this. I know that's part of the whole thing. But how is it generally going?
You're very kind. You know, it's going pretty well. We're certainly going through the motions, and a lot of it feels familiar. And then it's got this, you know, COVID layer that we all experience where, you know, certain things, they just, you know, everybody's got their masks on and everybody's kind of a little in hibernation in their various backstage. But it was nice to play for the people. I have to say, I was kind of secretly hoping that it would come back with a rush, that everybody would be so relieved and just come out to the gigs and the gigs would be sold out and everything. And that was not the case. It wasn't so much on Suzanne, because I heard from a lot of promoters, all their sales, ticket sales were down, people being nervous. So it still feels a little broken out there, which I wish I could say it was like, it's business as usual. It's promising, and it was certainly nice to get back up there and do. But it's, you know, it's still a little bit broken.
Mm. Sure. I played a gig first. It was just after lockdown in here. It was a place called the 100 Club in London on Oxford Street. A great venue. And we had big hopes for it. It had been cancelled because of lockdowns. And then we're going to do it now. It's open. And like you said, people weren't rushing out. We didn't have a great audience. And the people that did were quite fearful and had their masks on. We still had a good night. We're going to be performing again. Brilliant. But there's still that reticence here as well, which we're finding because we're trying to.
Yes.
So we'll see what happens in the next few months. But
yeah, and you kind of wanted to be back, and you want the audience, you wanted to be a full house and everybody just kind of like, you know, jubilant and whatever, you know, and it's everybody's a little guarded, you know, they're thankful to be there, but they're also kind of like nervous of their neighbor, you know.
Yeah, I get that.
Yeah.
We're human beings, Jerry. We're naturally nervous. It's all down to having a nervous system. You know, we just have to carry on with that and work through it. That's the important thing. Work through it. Before we actually listen to another airing of Ballad of the Peshwar Anan, it's awesome. We're going to hear that again. I'm going to actually just test Rebecca. I'm going to see if she's actually still got the magic. I mean, she's back in Lincoln now, as indeed am I, actually, hence the blurred backdrop. It's most peculiar. But in terms of actually the finale, Rebecca, there are two critical questions that you need to put, you know, to the team, you know, one person at a time, etc. Have you still got this? Or has all that time in Norwich, working 2-3 jobs a day, doing your sort of workout sessions in the morning, getting back to being a third-year student, reading English and journalism at the University of Lincoln, has that taken away from you? Or have you still got it? Go, Rebecca Bond.
We shall see. Well, Mark, have you had an interesting Zoom with us this evening?
That's been brilliant. I feel very very thankful for you guys speaking to me. It's really cheered me up. So thank you.
Oh, and it's been amazing to have you. Can we be welcoming you back anytime soon then?
Oh, yes, please. Yes, please. I can always talk about music. Brilliant.
We'd love to have you back. Pamela, how about you? Also, nice to see you again. It's been a long time. How have you been? And have you had a good evening with us, or day for you?
Oh, excellent. Yeah, it's really nice to see you. Rebecca, you look so beautiful. I love your hair color.
Oh, thank you so much. I've just realized how dark it's gotten here, though. Look at the horrible dark weather in England.
It's Lincoln, Rebecca. It's always dark here, you know.
Oh, gloomy and horrible.
I've had a really lovely time. I'm sorry I entered a few minutes late. I was actually on a writing meeting. I really was. And I think that they're building a new building on top of our building because there's just been like all this banging. And
that's percussion, Pamela. It's percussion.
I don't know if you heard any of that. Hopefully you didn't. Yeah, I had a lovely time.
can we welcome you back soon then, as always? We would love to. And Jerry, nice to meet you, Jerry. It's probably the first time I've spoken to you. How's it been for you?
Yeah, very nice, very nice. I'm sorry I'm late to the party. I'm desperately trying to do a little guitar session here. But I ran up to the roof to just say hi.
I was going to say, it's lovely and sunny.
It looks like a beach there.
It does.
Yeah, it's one of these New York rooftops in the building. So I found a little bit of shade. But the rest of it's like silver and... So it's like for an Irishman, it's like you instantly turn into a piece of crispy bacon up here.
It's not quite my gloomy room at the moment, is it? It's a lot nicer.
But
I've just got to say, Jerry, that it shows how prepared New Yorkers actually are, because if you've actually got beaches already laid on the top of skyscrapers, you're ready for global warming. You know, you're ready for the actual rising of the water. You know, it's sorted. You know, fantastic. Thinking ahead.
Yeah. They're ready for it. And they're already thinking about what the rent is going to be.
Always. That's capitalism for you. I shall say no more. Other than make sure you can access the Pocket Gods. They're available in all sorts of wonderful ways. Mark, any way in which you'd like to promote how people can get hold of the album and indeed what we're about to listen to once again in terms of the Ballad of the Peshwari Nun?
Okay, well, the Peshwari Nun is out now on YouTube and Spotify and Apple. The album's coming out in November the 5th. We're going to blow up Parliament and release our album.
Okay. Nice.
Again, I'd like to say something, but I can't. So we'll just let that go on that particular aspect. I'll restrict myself to my commentary empire earlier. Pamela, you're going to be back with us, of course, for New York Real Talk, which we're launching in the very near future, I believe.
Yes, I am. I'm spending all my free time in the library preparing so that I can actually be prepared for this show and do my due diligence as your co-host. And I'm very excited. And I hope that we can speak to all of you on the show as well.
Brilliant.
Exactly. And Jerry, obviously a delight to your good self. Congratulations with your ongoing success. Keep the tour going and marvellous things will obviously take place. As I like to say, you know, pandemic wasn't all bad. Zoom emerged from it. You know, it's great. You know, back in the day, it would have been much more difficult in the radio studio to do this. Rebecca, has it been good for you? Have you enjoyed being back on the programme?
It's been lovely. Thank you so much for having me back. I look forward to doing more.
Fantastic. So Rebecca Bond, Pamela Sue Mann, Jerry Leonard, Mark Lee, of course, Pocket Gods. Keep on keeping on. Mark, you get the honour. Would you like to introduce your band, of course, with this awesome track one more time?
Yep. This is the Pocket Gods with the Ballad of the Peshwari Nun.
And I have to say that the record looks knackered, frankly. A bit bumpy and very grey, but a good tune if it works.
It's about a 11:30, and I'm blind in the belly. We don't have no telly, so we can go out on Fridays. Head up the hill past the junk shop. It's made of wool and wood and stuff. And we'll contemplate the meaning.
say that the record looks knackered, frankly. A bit bumpy and very grey. But a good tune if it works.
The Midweek Drive zooming into the future and energised by the now. With regular appearances from Graham Harper, Phil Leonis, Phil Herdwood, Jonathan Lindsley, Sarah Huntley, Pamela Sue Mann, Robin Pierce, Jessica Burtis, Annette Andre, Arthur Weingarten, Richard Fitzwilliams, Gabriella Vangenians, Jean Bruce Scott and Taryn Kay, it's like an ever-expanding audio family of joy on Southside Broadcasting and Siren Radio.
Honesty, being trustworthy, having a good sense of humour. Yeah, those are the key characteristics that men apparently are looking for when they're searching for real love. But we've got to cope with things like rejection, hashtag me too, and lots of other insecurities. It's a disaster out there, or potential nightmare. So let's try and put people at ease by bringing on board two superb individuals. First of all, a dating expert extraordinaire, somebody who actually was a naturally inquisitive and gregarious child, apparently, wanted to be a pop star or a psychologist. It's the awesome Rachel Lloyd. How are you, Rachel?
Hi, Alex. I didn't know you had that biography.
Oh, we always like to do a bit of research. Very important.
Yes, lovely to talk to you.
And likewise, we also have, from Relate, Councillor Extraordinaire, the wonderful Josh Smith. How are you, Josh?
Yeah, very well, thanks.
Excellent. Let's come to you first, Josh. I mean, were you surprised by this, or is it just a case of, yeah, obviously, unless you actually have a whole barrage of lawyers and legal people to actually protect you, going on a date, even via eHarmony, can be a nightmare?
Yeah. I mean, it's, well, you know, I guess, was I surprised by the report? Well, there were some things in the report which were really expected. So, for example, we learned that, you know, people, men particularly, returning to dating were nervous about coming back and getting on the dating scene. There were other aspects of the report that were more surprising. So we learned that actually quite a large proportion of men found that they hadn't been affected, for example, by Me Too. So that was something that was quite surprising to us. And, you know, the other thing we learned, I suppose, was about the difficulties of men showing vulnerability, you know, in relationships, and around how they can communicating their needs to their partners. So that was something else that, you know, that came out of the report that's been commissioned by Relate and eHarmony.
Rachel, is this just a case of the 21st century version of the fragility of the male ego? The fact of the matter is, we are just nervous, sensitive souls who, frankly, we don't know what we want.
I think that men have always been empathic, sensitive people, hopefully. You two can, I'm sure, testify to that. But I think there's always been a culture, this sort of patriarchal culture, dare I say, that that still persists today, even though we don't think it does, because it's not really reflected properly in the media anymore. But we are, men are still kind of growing up in environments where perhaps they're not encouraged to be as open, to talk to their friends, to be as analytical. You know, we women, I mean, I have loads of friends that I tell everything, all my secrets to. And when I'm in a relationship, I often want to, I get told, don't be so analytical, you know, because I like to discuss everything. So I do want to sort of stick up for men and say it's probably partly conditioning that they just have to sort of carry their insecurities around more than women. And a quick stat for the books is that I think it's only around 20% of men, our report found, are willing to show vulnerability. And double the number of women are willing to go to counselling, you know, when there are issues in a relationship, for instance. So you can see that men are still kind of lagging behind when it comes to sort of being open and communicating.
Is it all about communication then, Josh, from your perspective? Is that a way of actually addressing issues where, I mean, clearly there are a lot of challenges with respect to a culture of toxic masculinity, other issues that sort of emerge with respect to that. I mean, you know, from the male perspective, we have understandably actually had an awful lot of issues to deal with over the last few years, and maybe we just need to share those.
Yeah, I mean, well, of course, we bring all sorts of experiences and beliefs from previous relationships, from our childhoods, and those come along with us when we go on a date and carry on throughout the relationship. And I suppose the reason why communication is key is sometimes your idea, Alex, of what a relationship might look like, and my idea and Rachel's idea, they might all be a bit different. And I think the thing about communication is it's about communicating our difference and being able to say what we want and what we need, and also not on a kind of emotional level, being able to show vulnerability, being able to show the parts of ourselves that maybe we feel a bit of shame about, that we're not so happy about, but being able to show them and experience acceptance by our partner. And you know, and I think Rachel's totally right there. A lot of men, you know, when we grow up, we said, you know, big boys don't cry, stiff upper lip, all this sort of thing. And actually, when it comes to our intimate relationships, that can really inhibit us.
And Rachel, those three key highlights that most men apparently are looking for: honesty, being trustworthy, having a good sense of humour. Presumably, those aren't unique in terms of masculine issues. I mean, women presumably are looking for those as well.
Yes, indeed. You know, we once did a big sort of report a couple of years ago. We're looking at both genders, and it was things like, things that sound a bit curious, like athleticism. But I think what we meant by that was...
Let's not go there, Rachel, not on a family show. Who knows what could happen?
Oh, gosh, your brain's gone there. You see, there's a male brain. My brain's gone to someone healthy.
Uh-huh, yeah.
No, but I mean, generally speaking, yes, looking for the same qualities, honesty and trust are really important. And we know that a sense of humor is one of the most attractive traits. Like, it's a real, you know, winner. So not surprised by that. We do know that men are generally more visual. And I can tell you things like, you know, our algorithm will track, you know, what people respond to on the platform, obviously anonymously. But we see patterns like, you know, women that obviously wear bikinis seem to do quite well. But that's just the initial contact, the initial kind of like, oh, who's on here and are they sort of attractive? Actually, you see that the conversations that really work between men and women are the more profound, deeper ones. When there's a message sent from a man to a woman that's just, hi, how are you? Doesn't tend to get much response. But when they start getting into things like, we had icebreaker questions once, like, what's your view of traditional gender roles? And people could pick those as an automatic question. And the conversations generated by those slightly unusual kind of prospects were huge.
Again, fascinating. The report, of course, is Men's Heads and Hearts. Where can people find the report in full? Rachel, where would you point people to go to? Would it be the website?
Yes, eHarmony is eHarmony.co.uk, where we will link to our friends at Relate. Josh?
Yep, and it's available on the Relate website as well, at relate.org.uk.
And Josh has proved that he's been visual because it is a Zoom call. So I'll actually switch my camera on briefly and say, hi, there we are. A little hello.
Hi, Alex.
Rachel obviously being mysterious, but that's perfectly okay. That's hello. Oh, there she is. We're all connected together. Brilliant
nice
stuff.
Nice to see you.
Rachel Lloyd and indeed Josh Smith. Huge thanks. Keep on keeping on. Be well, be happy, and continue your excellent work.
Have a great one.
Square pegs and round holes, or round holes and square pegs. That would probably seem to be the takeaway from a recent report by the Open University, in which the Open University and the Institutes of Directors have found that UK employers are facing a skill shortage when it comes to hiring specialist entry-level talent. So how can we actually address this? Well, the best person to actually talk about the particular report and indeed the findings of it is indeed Director of the Open University, the fabulous Viren Patel. How are you, Viren?
Wonderful. Good morning, Alex. Thank you.
Excellent. So would you like to just share with us initially some of the headlines from this particular report? Because it's 62% of organisation leaders struggling with recruitment. That's a significant number.
It is, Alex. And I think, you know, the real lack or the real acute shortage is in industry specific and specialist talent across many sectors. So, you know, it may be that it's a lack of nurses in the NHS. Could be a shortage of social workers in local government, or even as the current crisis has shown us, you know, in transport logistics, a lack of lorry drivers. So it is widespread, and it is from our research, it's very industry specific and specialist talent that seems to be missing.
Is this down to people choosing to take a degree platform which maybe doesn't have a vocationality at the end of it, maybe actually going to higher education as opposed to looking at an apprenticeship route and so on? Or is it just a case of a combination of factors that's led to the skill shortage?
I think, you know, this is not an issue that's sort of arisen recently, I think, Alex. I think, you know, we've been tracking this since 2017, and organisations have always been telling us that they've been facing a skill shortage. So, you know, 6 out of 10 organizations, as you said, you know, are experiencing this problem. And, you know, I think there is a longer term challenge for organizations around this, and events such as Brexit and the ongoing pandemic and the ending of the furlough, you know, have really amplified this and complicated the picture. So I don't think it's about individuals choosing a certain education path. I think this has been an inherent issue within our economy that, you know, there has been a skill shortage. And companies have been trying to fill that gap with temporary contract staff, but now actually that route has been blocked off for them, and they've got to try and find their own.
The Open University, clearly a world leader. Indeed, you could actually say you were a pioneer before the pandemic in terms of distance learning and so on, something that the rest of us have obviously had to catch up with, whether it's Blackboard, Collaborate, Ultra, or any of the other platforms that are actually available. Is that a route in which people who don't necessarily have the time or maybe even the inclination to actually carve out 2 or 3 years of their life to go to a traditional university or indeed educational routes, that the OU can actually step in and provide those skill-based training modules in a time which is convenient for the student?
Yeah, absolutely. I think, you know, ZOU has a flexible delivery model, which fits around, you know, the life of the work life of an employee, their home life, and, you know, and trying to make life better for the employer as well, in terms of how much time, you know, these employees take off work. So, you know, we do have a flexible model, but we also do have a range of qualifications or programs that can help support it. So, you know, learners don't have to go on a 3-year degree program or a 2-year program. They can go on and enjoy sort of, you know, smaller, shorter hits of learning through our micro-credentials, through our short courses, which are very skills and vocationally led, to top up their skills. So this is all about, for me, lifelong learning. And it doesn't mean that you need to do a degree to carry on learning. You can do short, sharp hits of learning throughout your career to progress and to drive, you know, these skills that you need.
Over half of businesses believe that apprenticeships and work-based learning are critical to their long-term success, which is, again, an increase from last year. Again, it makes sense, presumably, you're looking at business leaders to invest in their workforce. Otherwise, if you do have this skill lacunae and gap that comes through, then you're giving your competitors, presumably, an edge.
No, absolutely. And, you know, it's important that employers actually and staff work together on this to combat this issue. And organisations need to look at new ways to train and nurture their staff and grow their own skills in a sustainable manner and effectively invest in untapped potential. And, you know, formal training does provide a really good career path. It does help with, you know, improve sort of staff loyalty, improves engagement and obviously retention, and actually does help attract new talents into your organisation. And we've seen that across all the work that we've done with our employers. But also, I think candidates need to be thinking about how best they gain the right skills and the relevant experience, whether it's through their current employer or independently seeking opportunities to improve their skills. So, yeah, it's a joint effort. It's a two-way street, and it's about both employer and learner or staff trying to work together to meet their skills needs.
Viren, from your own perspective, is the prognosis good? I mean, looking at the Business Barometer report, I mean, clearly, if we take the words that comes out of senior government, you occasionally might be forgiven for simply saying they don't have a clue what's going on in Downing Street, but that's another issue entirely. I mean, overall, do we need to be fretful, concerned? Is it a case of, well, that's it? You know, you've got, as you mentioned, the perfect storm, pandemic, Brexit and everything else. We're doomed.
No, I don't think that's the case, Alex. I think, you know, there is light at the end of the tunnel. I think, you know, organisations are investing in their employees. They're becoming more savvy around staff development and pushing sort of their own ungrown, sort of homegrown talent. And I think, you know, that I think is a longer, medium term to longer term challenge and something that we will be able to fix. I think, in, you know, the shorter term issues that we're facing, we know we will have to see ourselves ride that wave, I think, and to come up with short-term solutions to that, whether that's through government support, whether that's organizations seeking different ways of doing work, or, you know, or maybe just, you know, trying to shift that work around their existing workforce. You know, they've got to come up with some short-term solutions, but the longer term picture, I think, is looking good, because more and more employers and more organizations are looking to invest in their staff.
And in terms of the phenomenon of remote working and other tech-based issues from that point of view, would you say that actually you need to have a genuine smorgasbord of approaches to this thing to actually say you have to be consistently turning up and being present is perhaps not necessarily the best way forward?
Yeah, that's really interesting. I think, you know, the last 18 months has shown us that actually remote working can work for a number of organisations, and it actually presents an opportunity in my mind to fill that skills gap, because, you know, you can, you know, employ somebody from Scotland, you know, for Edinburgh to fill a role in London, because you don't have to have them in the office 100% of the time. So I think our attitude and our that there is a change in culture around, you know, being in the office 20, you know, 9 to 5, 5 days a week. So I think that actually presents an opportunity in my mind.
You know, was struck by a recent comment that suggested that, well, if you go to outsourcing, it won't be too long before you're farming out prospective posts to the far corners of the globe, etc. But again, that's another issue for another day. Where can people actually find more details about the Business Barometer 2021 report, Viren?
So they can go to our website, www.open.ac.uk/business.
Verena, it's been awesome connecting with you, good self. We knew it would be. We'll throw in those last two customer satisfaction questions. Have you had a reasonably interesting Zoomer with us on the program today, being number one?
I have indeed, yes. Thank you, Alan.
And the next critical question is, can we look forward to connecting with you again in the not-too-distant future and continuing with our remote connections?
Absolutely, no problem at all. More than happy to help.